You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
The Football World Cup kicks off in Qatar at the end of this month. While this is the first time a Middle Eastern country has hosted such an event, the tournament has been shrouded in controversy with grave human rights abuses being committed. I first spoke to University of Otago politics professor Leon Goldsmith about a nation like Qatar hosting the world's biggest sporting event. The first question I have is, what do you think about Qatar holding the Football World Cup?
Oh, I think it's quite, for someone who's spent a lot of time over in the Gulf and knows the area very well, I think it's quite exciting. I know it's seen as a fairly major milestone for people in the Gulf and across the Middle East, but also Asia. So, I mean, from that point of view, it's going to be very interesting to see how they manage to stage this event. Yeah, from a political point of view, it's also very interesting. I mean, I don't really buy into arguments about it being good or bad. I think it's really just a reflection on the changing sort of global patterns. I mean, FIFA, you know, as the major sporting event, the World Cup, it kind of does reflect global patterns and trends. And for up until the 2000s, it was rotated back between Europe and the Americas. But since then, we've had World Cups in Africa, and this Qatar World Cup is the second to be staged in Asia after Japan and South Korea previously, because I think, let's face it, that Qatar is an Asian country. Southwest Asia, its lines of connectivity culturally, politically, economically are very much in the Asian sphere. So yeah, I'm going to talk about it as a Middle East country, I'm sure, but I think we need to be cautious with this sort of Middle East Arab framing or Islamic. So yeah, I think it's interesting.
As you said, it is quite good to see a country in Southwest Asia holding a World Cup for the first time. But do you think it's quite problematic for a country with a questionable human rights record to hold such an event?
Oh, absolutely. I think we should always be holding our international community up to standards of human rights, and trying to search for accountability, especially where there's, you know, grievous human rights abuses. And I think the Gulf is one of the most problematic areas in terms of human trafficking and a lack of labour laws protecting the conditions and the rights of expatriate workers. However, I also think that we need to be consistent in the way that we talk about human rights and critique human rights issues. So, I mean, for example, I don't recall as much emphasis on human rights when we had the Winter Olympics in Beijing recently, or in 2008, the Summer Olympics. And a lot of people were saying, well, hang on, where was all of this in 2018 when Russia hosted the previous World Cup? You know, Russia had only, you know, 4 years previously annexed Crimea and had engaged in, you know, brutal violence with its conventional forces in Syria in the period leading up to that World Cup. But there wasn't, you didn't see French cities boycotting the Russian event or those types of things at that time. So I think we need to be very careful, and I think we should have critiqued those parties at that time, because if we just seem to be selectively criticising the human rights records of countries when they hold these types of events, it very quickly boils down to a type of identity politics which detracts from the very important question of human rights itself, because all of a sudden you have people in the Arab world who are saying, hang on, why are you, or the wider Islamic world, saying, why are you criticising us? But you didn't criticise the Russians. What's the difference? It's because we're Muslims, and this type of discourse gains momentum and it actually creates more division and distraction from the really important question of human rights in the Gulf and everywhere else for that matter. I think that's probably the key point there.
How do you think such a tiny nation was able to pull off getting the rights to hold a major event? Is Qatar quite a big player in the region?
Well, I mean, Qatar is an interesting country because, on the one hand, it's completely minute. I mean, its national citizenship is roughly around Christchurch, size of Christchurch, or less than Christchurch. Obviously, it has around 3 million if you take into account the expatriate population. So it's tiny in terms of its geography. It's just a tiny peninsula, you know, probably not bigger, much bigger than, smaller than the Otago region. So it's very small demographically and geographically. But it's a big country in terms of its political influence. It's also a very big country in terms of its economic power. So it wasn't until not that long ago Qatar was the wealthiest country in the world from a per capita GDP perspective. They are sitting on a vast oil and gas reserve, which is becoming increasingly valuable, especially the gas, given what's happening in Europe. So they have a real clout in the Middle East since the mid-1990s, since they established the Al Jazeera network, which is also highly influential around the globe now. So they pack a huge punch for a very tiny country. So it's not really surprising that they were able to gather the resources. I know there was a lot of speculation and contentious about corrupt practices in FIFA and bribery and so forth. But, I mean, this is, unfortunately, it's become a bit of a fact of life, and it points more to the structural features of our global economy than any one particular country. But I think it's not surprising that Qatar was able to do this. So they're already a major player in global football. They've been sort of like, you know, the big brands, the big names in football, sponsored by Qatar Foundation, Qatar Airlines, talking about Barcelona, Paris Saint-Germain, all these big. I mean, I was playing with my daughter in the playground after school, and there's three or four boys there. They're all wearing Manchester City jerseys. And Manchester City is owned by their neighbours, the Emiratis, Sheikh Mansour. They're becoming really a major part of the global football kind of environment, so therefore it's not really surprising that they were able to win this event. You compare Qatar to, despite its tiny size geographically and demographically, you compare it to a huge multinational company, which can be just a handful of people, but they have huge global influence. So it's not really surprising that they were able to do this.
We touched on it briefly before, but a lot of the migrants who helped build the stadiums were effectively being used as slave labor by the conditions they were working in, how little they were being paid. I believe it's been reformed already, but do Middle East nations traditionally have quite lax labor laws when in terms of construction?
Yeah. So, I mean, when we talk about, you know, Middle East countries, we're talking about a vast number of countries with extremely different situations. But in terms of the Gulf, there's a similarity between the way that labour has been used, especially over the last sort of half century since the oil boom, and the way that their economies have been set up. So, yeah, it is definitely true that there's very little protection for expatriate workers who choose to come and work in the Gulf. Relatively speaking, their incomes are low, but a lot of them, it's still comparatively advantageous for them to be in the Gulf. I mean, I've been to a lot of the labour camps where they accommodation these, and it's squalid. They're packed into mostly air conditioning. I mean, air conditioning is a necessity of life out of the world, but into very cramped conditions and shared accommodation, and it's pretty eye-opening to see. But I think we need to keep an eye on where these labour laws come from. They come from the nature, the structure of the rentier state. So the rentier state, I don't want to get into fine detail, but is a function of the global economy, which requires stability and solid partnerships with Gulf states. So we in the West are equally sort of responsible. The British, you have to remember that Qatar was a protectorate of Britain until 1971. So Britain played a major role in establishing these states. So Qatar was an oil concession before it was a nation state. And Britain played a key role in consolidating the rule of the Al Thani tribe and that ruling clan, and to maintaining their control. So obviously the economic clout vastly outweighs the demographic clout, so the need for all of this labour to come in. And then, you know, the vested interest within that, which we've all helped to maintain, like take full advantage of the, you know, huge labour resources which are available from South Asia and Southeast Asia, and now increasingly from Africa and places like this. So I think when we look at the labour laws, and they have put in place some kind of token reforms since the scrutiny has been placed upon them, is very much a function of the bigger picture, the way that this part of the world has basically sort of, how has it managed to be a sort of this last anachronism of absolute monarchy, and we've actually played a key role. The structure of power and labour exploitation is very much linked to wider global economic and political patterns.
And you touched on it briefly before, how certain Middle Eastern or as you said, Western Asian state are vying for power sponsoring football teams. Do you think hosting such an event will maybe push Qatar to have a greater clout in the region?
100%. I mean, it's risky. So Qatar's playing a kind of like a quite a delicate balancing act. So you imagine you've got only a tiny country of 300,000. They can't depend on expatriates to defend them in a conventional sort of security environment. It's interesting that they've brought in French, Turkish, Pakistani security to help with the event. But the they're basically completely vulnerable to much larger powers on both sides, Saudis and the Iranians especially. They saw what happened to Kuwait in 1990-91. So how do you achieve security in that situation? Well, you have to vastly amplify your soft power. So the ability to be able to impress upon the West, the ability to hold this kind of event and showcase your massive economic and innovative technology and all of the, I mean, it's going to be quite phenomenal. It'll be hard to imagine what they've put on. I was there when they were building the stadiums. Incredible. A lot of people will be very impressed. But at the same time, they need to balance that against their other major objective in the region, which is to be kind of at the vanguard of Islamic movements. So they like to feel that they are the only ones supporting the Muslim Brotherhood. They're the only Middle East country that still continues to support the supposedly pro-democracy Muslim Brotherhood. They were the ones who facilitated all the negotiations around the Taliban in Afghanistan. So they're trying to play both sides, and they have to appease the conservative elements of their own population. I think that's probably the least of their concerns. I think Qataris will see the pragmatic aspect of how much this event is going to benefit them. But they're trying to basically enhance and amplify their soft power in all directions. And whether or not they can actually pull this off is going to be very interesting to see. But of course, this is part of the reason why the Saudis and the Emiratis are incredibly concerned about Qatar enhancing their regional influence and their global influence, because they are very concerned to change the foreign policy and political behaviour of Qatar, because they're obviously completely opposed to the Muslim Brotherhood, completely opposed to other Islamist movements in Syria or Afghanistan or so forth. So they are kind of flaunting it in the face of their neighbours, but if they can enhance their soft power across the region and globally, then they will feel as if they've achieved their objective and they're secure.
That was University of Otago's Leon Goldsmith talking about Qatar hosting the Football World Cup.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95bfm.com/bcasts.